So, I would like to start off by apologizing for taking so long for getting the show released. We had some technical difficulties, which ultimately stemmed from my forgetting some of the equipment. Either way, we were able to get a recording off of somebody else, and I had to do some extra editing and filtering, but here it is. This quality is lower than our typical, so I apologize for that. But here we go.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
This is episode 81.
Live from PenguinCon.
That's right, for those of you who are here. For everyone else who listens to it afterwards, it's going to be recorded
afterwards. Yes.
But we're glad we've got, we're glad we're here. We had a good time.
Yes.
And so, let's kind of catch up. Normally what we do,
what we did last week?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
So what was your high point at PenguinCon?
At the PenguinCon was, I received a copy of Absolute OpenBSD by Michael Lucas. It's from No Starch Press. And I got the second printed copy ever, and it is autographed.
Second edition.
And it's the second edition, but it's the second printed copy.
Of the second edition.
Of the second edition. And I have to review it on the show in a month. So.
That's right. And
I'm on chapter two, and maybe you can sit my book one minute.
That's right. Very well, Matt. And in conjunction with that, I'm going to then be doing a distro review of OpenBSD. Normally, I do Linux distros, but we're going to get off the beaten track and try to.
We're actually considering an all BSD episode for that.
Yeah. So that would be kind of
cool.
So Tony, what do you go through this past week?
If you're not, don't follow his Google Plus feed. While he's driving, he takes a picture of himself on the way to PenguinCon.
And then if you look into the picture in the back seat, there's an empty baby. But empty the baby. But anyway, yeah. So that was pretty funny. I like that. Yeah. So and of course, as far as I go,
what did you do?
One of the most fun things I did this past week, aside from being here at PenguinCon, is I had built, you know, I'm kind of a database geek, and I'm using MySQL for some things. And normally, when I create a new table in there, I take advantage of PHP, my admin's little GUI interface, and just go through the various little fields, type in my fields, the parameters, and you know that type of thing. Well, what I ended up doing for the first time ever is I used a SQL query statement, create table query statement, and created my whole table. Now, after a couple of little errors, which I,
then it was a drop table.
It worked perfectly, and then I imported about 13,000 records. Bingo! It went just beautiful. It was a CSV file, so. So that was the most exciting thing I did, and then of course, not too nothing.
Yes.
But just watching you prepare for the show today, Matt.
For those of you that weren't here yet, I tipped over a little farmer chair and landed on the floor.
But it's a comfortable chair.
So I guess we've kind of caught up. I guess it's time to move on to
Matt. What's happening with the kernel?
All right, we have a release candidate on Sunday, the 21st of April, 2013, at 1500 Pacific Daylight Time, Linus Torvalds, release kernel 3.9-RC8, and this is what he had to say about it. Yes, I was really hoping and originally planning to release 3.9 final this weekend, but we had enough issues that I just didn't feel comfy about it. It was borderline, and none of the issues were huge, and maybe I could have called this just 3.9 and opened the merge window, but hey, another week won't hurt. The bulk of the changes here are networking, both core and drivers, but there's Arch fixes, Spark. Spark, x86, ARM, and PowerPC, and random other stuff. A couple of reverts and some cleanups. The short log gives some flavor of the details. Nothing here on its own would have delayed 3.9, but for me, I was hoping for a calmer week. Please don't send me pull requests unless it's something really critical, and let's aim for a nice calm 3.9 release next weekend, okay, which is today. Linus tends to release the kernels on Sunday, right after we do the show. So, the release candidates are usually a week old.
Yeah. Of course, we do it early in the morning, usually.
Yeah.
So probably happening right now.
Yeah. So, the main line is 3.9-RC8, and our stable updates this week were on Thursday, the 25th of April, 2013, at 21:27 Pacific Daylight Time. Great Pearl Harbor released kernel 3.8.9 with the PH files changed, 405 lines inserted, 222 lines deleted. On Thursday, the 25th of April, 2013, at 21:29 Pacific Daylight Time, Great Pearl Harbor released kernel 3.4.42 with 39 files changed, 283 lines inserted, and 166 lines deleted. Then on Thursday, the 25th of April, 2013, at 21:30 Pacific Daylight Time, Great Pearl Harbor released kernel 3.0.75 with 29 files changed, 227 lines inserted, and 171 lines deleted. And then on Friday, April 26th at 12:25 Pacific Daylight Time, Great Pearl Harbor released kernel 3.8.10. Now you'll notice that 3.8.9 happened just a couple of days earlier. That was because this was to fix one problem. He says, it fixes a build error in the 3.8.9 release. If you can properly build that kernel, there's no need for you to upgrade. If you enable config_ns, you need this release. Many thanks to Shay Levy for bringing this problem. And then on Friday, the 26th of April, 2013, at 12:42 Greenwich Mean Time, Ben Hutchings released kernel 3.2.44 with 91 files changed, 678 lines deleted, inserted, and 226 lines deleted. And will somebody stop messing with the lights? I know, maybe they can hear my loudness.
That's all right. Well, we still have
that. I'm going to take a picture. And there they go again.
We can still
read.
Yeah. We're going to keep going.
All right.
We're professionals.
Yes. And my kernel developer quote of the week comes from Greg Crow Hartman. He says, time to build a kernel. Real time, 665 minutes, 28 seconds. User time, 585 minutes, 42 seconds. System time, 30 minutes, 35 seconds. And he says, I don't recommend doing a kernel build for a Raspberry Pi on a Raspberry Pi unless you have a lot of spare time.
600 minutes is what, 10 hours?
It is a long freaking time.
Wow, that is a long
time. So, yeah.
All right.
And that's the kernel news.
Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
That's right.
Yep, so this is the part where I go through and look up the...
You kind of sneaked up on us.
What is their problem with these lights?
We'll be fine. We're just
gonna... I would rather rampage. Let's get the pitchforks and find out who's doing it. Right now.
That's all right.
All right. So, starting off with the beginning of the week, we had calculating Linux 13.4. That was released by Alexander Drafters-Curley.
that sounds pretty cool. Yeah. Matter of fact.
Which calculated Linux is a Gentoo based distro with KDE, GNOME 2, and or SFCE.
Yeah.
That's your review.
That's going to be my review this week, Calculate Linux. And the reason why I'm doing it is because it came right out after Scientific Linux, and I was feeling particularly intellectual.
Scientific?
Yeah. So I thought, I'll go ahead and do that. So we'll be hearing that in 2 minutes.
Yeah, and on the next one was the 24th. We have Red Flag Linux 8.0, which is a Beijing-based software company that specializes in development of open-source software products for the local market, and it's specialized for them.
Yeah,
yeah,
they pretty much is. Eventually, Red Flag Planet Linux just had a kind of a KDE summit, Chinese style, Beijing. And it was an opportunity for KDE folks to get together. I think that KDE is probably going to maybe play more of a role in that particular as well.
Yeah.
I hope Matt's not taking it into custody.
All the other two releases.
Oh my God, I know, there are like eight of them.
Yeah, there's a couple lectures that I don't remember seeing last time, or in the past.
Yes.
So we have the main Ubuntu 13.04 released on the 25th. Mm-hmm. And then we have Edubuntu, Kubuntu, Zubuntu, Lubuntu, Studiobuntu, or Ubuntu Studio actually. New one is Ubuntu GNOME.
Yes.
So for those that you like GNOME 3, and you do not like GNOME, then that's the one
you come back over there!
Matt's finally fixed our light. and then there's Ubuntu Kaylin, which I've never heard of this one before, but it's a very, very un-Ubuntu, localized for or into simple Chinese and thoroughly customized to suit the taste of and habits of the Chinese users.
I think that's the distro that Canonical is working with some organizations in China, apparently, to create that a distro, a version of Ubuntu specifically for China.
Yeah. And if you're not sure what the other ones I rattled off, Kubuntu is KDE, Zubuntu has XFCE as the desktop. Edubuntu is more for schools and communities, and terminal servers. Or
I'll have another stroke.
LTSP, which is the Linux Terminal Server Project, has that baked into it so that they can do network booting into other machines. So GNOME Ubuntu, like I said,
we've only made this for Ubuntu.
No, he's just doing a quick run.
Oh, okay.
Right. And then Kaylin, which we also mentioned a second ago.
Yeah.
We also, on the 26th, we had Sparky Linux 2.1.1 Mint.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Sartan Kowalski.
Yeah, that sounds, Paul
Yep, and it's using Mate or Mate, which is a fork of GNOME 2.
Yeah.
And it's a Debian based distro.
Yeah, I was going to mention about Sparky Linux is that they count themselves as a lightweight, because I went up to the website and did a little investigating. They count themselves as a lightweight Linux distribution, but over time now, the size of the distro has grown to a DVD size. So any older computers. Sparky Linux. What they've done is they provided a set of instructions on the website for booting it from a USB drive in case your older computer doesn't have a DVD drive. So I thought that was kind of convenient. Hopefully it has a USB.
Yeah, but if it's old enough that it doesn't have a DVD drive, is it even going to boot from USB?
Well, you know.
You guys not even have USB. I have some computers that are CD only that have USB.
USB 1, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one.
But they don't boot from USB.
All right. The next one we have is someplace Linux 4, which is like fast and lightweight distribution with OpenBox and Debian Unstable as its branch.
They're calling this release Adam Hart Mother, which I'm not sure.
Adam Hart Mother?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're calling it.
It's a Pink Floyd album.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that makes
way
sense.
Way back. Like, way before things like...
Okay.
Set the controls for the Heart of the Sun. Before Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun?
Yeah, that era.
Okay.
Yeah.
But with this release, Tony, they switched to a full rolling release model, which is kind of interesting. And they also, something I noted too when I went to their site and did a little investigating is that they have their own installation program called Linstaller, And it's selfless Linux oriented, thanks to its configuration system. It can be adapted to many other live distributions. So that was kind of interesting. And the one last thing about them is that they've got something called Brix. Now, Brix is a new tool that permits the user to easily remove some resource intensive applications, such as Bluetooth or printing. If you've got an older computer that doesn't have Bluetooth support on it, you can get rid of that through this program called Brix.
Cool.
Yeah, I thought so too.
And now, last but not least, last one is Descent OS.
Yes.
4.0, which is also a Debian based distro with Monte as its desktop environment.
Provis says now with the light moonlight vision.
Yeah.
That's about it. Yeah, and with Descent, they in this particular release, what they did is they replaced Midori, which is a browser with IceWeave, which is the open source version. Open source, I guess it's the free version of Firefox. And they also Firefox. I think IceWeave is Firefox with the.
IceWeave is with all their artwork mostly removed.
Yeah.
Because that's what's got it.
That's what Debian ships with, right?
Right.
IceWeave. But what they did, Descent, they added a small application known as a support channel that allows anyone seeking support to connect directly with a chat room and talk with other users about their issues immediately. So that's kind of nice. You can find and bingo here into that little IRC/support area. So kind of a nice touch, I thought. Cool. I guess that kind of runs it out, right?
Yeah.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
Number 5 is Ubuntu GNOME with 18.27.
And trending up.
No surprise there, actually.
Because of the release. Mm-hmm.
Number 4 is Fedora with 19.94.
And trending up.
Yeah.
All right.
Number 3 is Magia with 28.27.
And trending up.
Number 2 is Mint.
What?
Yeah,
that's
Mint is
right.
Number 2 now.
Gotta love it, thank goodness.
34.51.
And trending up.
And back in the number one spot is Ubuntu with 39.30.
Right.
And trending up. And it's only because they had a release. Next week, Mint will be back
and
on
if
top.
You add, well, if you added all the Ubuntu different desktops to it, it'd be over 5,000.
Nobody
same
asked
same.
For your opinion,
right? All right, well, look.
I think it'll be well over because you have Ubuntu, Lubuntu, Zubuntu.
But yeah. Mint is the Mint desktop. That's it. That's all there is. That's what.
No.
No one asked for your opinion either, Kevin.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and we're going to keep our podcast rolling.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
Now, when you hear the name of this distro that I'm reviewing this week, you're inclined to think it's designed for specialist processing, science, math, stuff like that. But Calculate Linux is more than just that. It's actually been optimized for two distinct groups of users. There's the home users and then small to medium-sized businesses. And not only that, it also has a media center edition, which I was very surprised to see. Yeah, so I downloaded, and I'm going to talk about the main, you know, desktop version, but I also downloaded the Media Center. It's basically XBMC on a DVD. So that's what it is, different color themes, that type of thing. But yeah, so Calculate Linux is not what I thought it was when I first got it. But it's desktop complements the server solution, which, according to the website, can replace a Windows NT domain controller. And provides provide additional services for users. Well, first I'm going to cover the vitals. The name, of course, is Calculate Linux. The maintainer is Alexander Trzaskowski. The distro's latest birthday. Now, Calculate Linux is a rolling release. The 13.4 was released on April 21st, 2013. It's a derivative of Gen 2. The kernel that's available in this release is kernel 3.8.4. And the review desktop is KDE 4.10.1. Now, first, the line environment. Calculate Linux takes a while to boot. After all, it's a 2.2 gigabyte DVD. But when it's done, it finishes with a flourish. Music and cool desktop wallpaper with two penguins fishing. But wait, this Gen 2 based distro has two emperor penguins fishing. Anyone not aware of it, Gen 2 is a type of penguin. So what's up with the fact they got emperor penguins? They didn't quite figure that out. But the wallpaper finishes with the tagline, easy Linux from the source. And again, boot up was very easy, went into a very nice style.
Yes, it's based on Gentoo, but you don't have to compile everything, right?
It's all taken care of for you. And as a matter of fact, he installed the environment. What I did, I took advantage of the option to install to a USB, and so the installed environment is from the USB. I never actually installed it on my hard drive. But we'll talk about that in a minute, too. As noted earlier, this it's KDE, but Calculate has configured the Plasma desktop a bit differently. The panels are typically seen at the bottom of the screen is at the top, and it bears resemblance to GNOME's layout. System tray icons are on the right, and the traditional menu-style launcher is on the left, along with a desktop switcher for four desktops, and a nice folder drop-down for all of your commonly used places. The caching is gone because they locked the panel too. Those of you who don't aren't familiar with KDE, there's like a little configuration cache. And when I realized I knew it was KDE going in, I thought, where's the cache? Well, they locked it. And so when you lock your panel, the cache goes away. And if you've been unlocking it, appears, and you can configure it. Now, Calculate Linux's desktop contained some interesting assortment of icons. You had a home folder. Gparted, because they switched to Gparted as their partitioning utility on this release. And there's an install icon, and also what I thought was very helpful.
So the installer doesn't actually do the partitioning, it drops you out to Gparted, where you do the partitioning and drops you back into the installer?
Somewhat, but remember, I installed on a USB, so...
That would be the same process.
Yeah, sure. So. But also, it has an install guide, which I thought was really helpful, because... It opens up and it just will step you through the entire process. And when we talk about Gentoo-based distros, we're going to talk about the package manager in a little bit. And then finally, Conversation, which is an IRC channel chat client, is also on the desktop. Now, hidden at the bottom was a panel, which was, it was hidden by default, and I initially missed it during my checking out of the live desktop. Let's see, the defaults. The default browser for Calculate is, of course, Conqueror and Chromium. The Office Suite is LibreOffice 3.6.4.3. It's also called the Gentoo Official Package. And when you open it up, you get the little cow there, and that's what gives you cow, which is kind of interesting. The mail client is KMail. And, of course, the file manager is Dolphin. And Conqueror can also be used as a file manager by selecting that profile from the drop-down in the Conqueror window.
So you can eschew Dolphin for Conqueror by default?
I'm sorry?
You can eschew Dolphin
yes.
for Conqueror by default?
Yeah, you would have to go into where you set up your defaults and change that. But yeah, it's available, which I like to see because I've always liked Conqueror, and I didn't like Dolphin when it first came out, but now I love it.
Right.
So figure that out. All right, the install process. Now, getting to the install process is easy in Calculate Linux. There's a link on the desktop. And then there's the Calculate Console. Now, the Calculate Console, I use this console to prepare a USB drive for install. I selected Flash Install and was taken to another screen which showed my 4 GB flash drive. I had the opportunity, under Advanced Parameters, to add the mount point, file system format, and format and size. All of that I was able to do. Once in place, I clicked the install button, but wait, the partition was still mounted and I lost my settings. So I took care of that and then proceeded again. The process takes you through 4 steps. Formatting the partitions, unpacking the system image to the target, configuring flash install, and preparing the system for reboot. Calculate Linux completes the process a little inelegantly. The DVD is not ejected, but again, I kind of took care of that before post-finish when I rebooted. And then it goes to grub, and it was all, it was a success. I was able to get that out of there, reboot into it just fine. Now, the install environment, there are a couple of aspects to this Linux distro that amused me. For example, when the screen locked, again, if you step away from it for a few minutes, your screen will go into lock mode, and you have to enter a password to get back in to unlock it. Well, what's interesting is that you supply a password to unlock the screen, but not with Calculate Linux. All you have to do is press a key or move the mouse and the login screen disappears.
Yeah, the same thing happened with me on when I did my Fed Up from 17 to 18 with Glory. Yeah. The same thing started happening. Yeah. It hasn't annoyed me enough to figure out how to turn it off.
Yeah, so it's almost like it's a screensaver that looks like a login screen, and you just move your mouse and it goes away. I thought that was kind of odd. I'd not seen that before. So.
Yeah.
But it was a little different. But that's fine. Now, also, the other thing that was a little puzzling for me was the fact that the settings did not persist on the USB install. Now, typically, I think you have, at least in a lot of them that I've seen, you have the ability to either set that up as an option or not. And from what I can recall, there was no option to set that up as, there was no option visible to set that up. And that just simply means I can save, for example, my left-handedness, I can save that as my mouse.
And how was the mouse configured? Was it easy, straightforward?
Yeah, because it's KDE.
Yeah. What was that one you had the problem with, though? That was KDE also.
Was it
Razer?
No, it was Razer QT.
Oh, Razer QT.
Yeah, Razer QT, and I had to go into XORG, and I had to set up a little tiny script to do it automatically. But the downside to this particular distro is that, again, I couldn't save my settings, so a little disappointing. One of the major differences between this distro and many of the others that I've recently reviewed is package management. Calculate Linux is Gentoo based, so Portage is Package Manager, a utility I have not examined with any depth. So I wondered if I would emerge from my package install. Okay, that's an inside joke because emerge is, I believe, the command that's used to install.
Right.
But anyway,
emerge is
that would only really well.
It's Package Manager on Gentoo.
Portage.
Oh, you're right.
But emerge is
the install command, where Portage is.
Did I just say that?
You did.
So you said to install. To install all packages, you said. I thought you were talking about the distro.
All right, that's okay. Well, we're all back on the same page. That's good. All right, so, but anyway, so it's Gentoo based, and let's see here. Yes. So the documentation icon on the desktop is very helpful because if you've never really used a Gentoo based distro and you're going to install software, even for testing like I did, and what I chose for my testing install was Firefox. It will step you through the process. Let's see here. So, the first thing I did is to make sure the system's up to date. Now, for Debian-based systems, it's apt-get update. And those of you who use Debian-based distros or Ubuntu-based distros know that. The Portage Package Manager uses EIX-sync. And I know, that's what it is. And you can also use this command to search for a package you're trying to install. And so what I did is I used EIX space Firefox, and I received a list of available packages and versions. And there were a couple of them listed there. And again, there was like a couple of different versions for it. Now, at that point in time, due to my ignorance about Portage, I thought all I had to type was emerge Firefox and it would install. Not quite. I needed to do, after a couple of false starts and a little help from the Gentoo wiki, which is very helpful. It's got a lot of information there, and if you're interested in a Gentoo-based distro, it's kind of like Arch. You know, Arch is...
You know what they say about Gentoo.
What's that?
It's for guys with too much time on their hands.
Okay, that probably is it. But what I ended up doing is I typed in, to get it to install successfully, I typed in emerge firefox-bin, which I believe is, that was the key Firefox package I had to install. That's what Portage was looking for, and with a minute or two, Firefox was listed in my launcher menu, and it opened to the Calculate Linux homepage. So, once I got the hang of that, it was really very easy to do, because it'll take you through the resolving of dependencies, all those kinds of steps that you typically need to when you go and install something. But if you're not familiar with it, you'll want to read up on it a little bit. This is a KDE-based distro, so all of the KDE tools are available, and I felt very comfortable using Calculate Linux for the typical day-to-day kinds of things. The support forums, this is a Russian-based distro, and it's used quite a bit over in Eastern Europe and in Russia. So the English support is not as heavy.
Left a little bit to be desired.
A little bit. But what I did is I simply used Chrome, and Chrome has an automatic translate function. So when I would go to the forum, it would automatically translate it to English for me, and then I was able to search and find some things. But again, I think if Russian is a second language for you, you'll have no problem with this. I'll probably end up sticking with what I use, and that's Kubuntu for my day-to-day distro. But again, it's very functional, and it was a nice opportunity to check out a Gentoo-based distro. So there are a few interesting programs on here I want to share with you. They have something called FD Reader, which is an open source cross-platform ebook reader. They also have something called Sweeper. Now, I wasn't familiar with this, but as it turns out, Sweeper is a utility that's part of the KDE software compilation. So I went to Synaptic and on my regular laptop, and sure enough, there it was. So I installed it, and it really does some nice housekeeping for you as far as your movie history and various temp files and that kind of thing. There's also something called Sandbox, and this is a tool originally used in Gentoo to monitor and restrict access to the file system for a process. So, again, it kind of has that sandbox, I think, is sort of a generic term anyway for restricting something into just keeping it into a certain area. And then there were quite a few forum management tools. So my rating on this, I recalculate Linux 3.0. If you're Russian, you should have no problem using it. Or if Russian, as I said, is your second language, you should have no problem with that at all. So my decision to review this issue was a calculated risk, and I figured it would be okay, and it was. So again, that's this week's just to review calculated Linux.
Well, all right, very cool.
That's right.
When you went to their website, did you try to get on their IRC channel?
No.
Okay, because Profus is saying he's trying to get on there and it's giving out that gateway there.
Oh, is it? Okay. No, I never did. And that's usually because I waited a few days to do it, and I tried to.
Sure.
I didn't.
Wonder if it has something to do with the translation too, whether it doesn't translate.
Sort of like, well, yeah, the Russian alphabet. So it's sort of things like that. But that's part of the problem too. You do need to translate.
Yeah.
I mean, use the support system that forms. Okay, so what are we on to next?
It's time for the tech news of the week.
All right, this week, first up, we have the German Parliament says software patents harmful. The Bundestag has taken up a motion against software patents. This is what it says. One, software patents restrict developers' ability to exercise their copyright. It also says that software patents help create monopolies and hurt innovation. Two, under the European Patent Convention, software patents are illegal. This creates legal uncertainty, which can be expensive for big companies and deadly for small ones. They also said that the government needs to ensure that software is covered by copyright alone. So the Bundestag coming out in favor against software patents.
Well, that's going to be kind of interesting. Yeah, it's almost the opposite here.
Yeah. The whole system needs to be tracked to start with.
Yeah, yeah. using the copyrights instead of things.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Next up, MariaDB and SkySQL team up. Oracle bought Sun and gained control of MySQL. Not by accident. Well, now the creators of MySQL have rejoined forces. SkySQL announced on 4/23 a merger with Monte Program AB. The community part will remain the MariaDB Foundation. Here's what Michael Monte Wideman, the creator of both MySQL and MariaDB, had to say about it. I'm ensuring that the MariaDB project will remain open source forever while knowing that enterprise and community users of both the MySQL and MariaDB databases will benefit from best-in-breed products, services, and support provided by SkySQL. And who doesn't want the best for their kids?
Yeah.
And this is what Patrick Salmon, SkySQL CEO, said about it. By bringing on board the talented MariaDB developer team, SkySQL poses a comprehensive partnership to leading open source database users. We are committed to develop MariaDB into the most versatile open source database. We look forward to working with the MariaDB Foundation as they engage with developers and users of MariaDB, as well as with their important mission of ensuring the independence of the MariaDB project itself. Now, one of the reasons this is so newsworthy is because when Sun bought, Oracle bought Sun, the core developers left, and they formed two separate companies. They formed Monte Program AB, and SkySQL, were both they were the original creators of MySQL, and now they're back together, and it's just a matter of time before MySQL is done.
Yeah.
So, Because who knows what Oracle's going to do with it? You know, they have a tendency to shut stuff down. So.
Yeah, it'll be kind of interesting. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. And lastly, I have first quarter earnings off at IBM. IBM reported first quarter earnings of $23.5 billion. That is off 5% year over year. Accompanied with a decline in net income of 1%, it does not bode well. The plan is to leverage Linux to save the day. While power systems are most often used for AIX, Linux runs well on them. Mark Loathbridge, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, had this to say. This opportunity is of similar size to Unix, but growing faster. We've already had some key success with wins this quarter in China and in Europe. And in fact, Watson is based on Power Linux. Though this will take time to mature, it provides a real opportunity for future growth. So IBM's looking to Linux to regain all of a sudden that market share that they just slid off.
Yeah, well, that's... I bet they'll be successful.
So do I. So that's all I have.
All right. Great. Thank you. Well, actually, my news this week has been in the convention scene, so we need to do it now. But I can wait till you go through the rest of the news. Is it Tony?
I actually didn't have anything with the news either, so
okay.
Great. Continue on to the convention scene.
Yeah, we will as soon as I do my Katie corn. I have that part. And each week, of course, I have, because I use KDE as my primary desktop environment, I kind of keep an eye on what's going on in that scene, and there was a KDE Tea Time podcast that was just released, I think, about a week and a half ago, which I missed last week. I just couldn't believe that, so I'll be sure you have a link to that in the show notes. I've got a couple of tools I want to share with you, too, and actually one of them I already mentioned was the Sweeper. That's in the repositories, if for any of you who use KDE and want to install that. I also discovered yesterday an excellent way to deactivate your touchpad. And I think this may work not just in KDE, but I believe that it'll work in other distros too. And you can give it a try. If you hit your function key and you hit F3, it will turn off your touchpad completely. And I can use my mouse, I have my touchpad now, I can bang on that here. You know how it is, if you're using a mouse and you accidentally hit the touchpad, your cursor can fly all over the place. So going back to function key, F3 again will reactivate it. So I wanted to share that with you guys. Does it work for you? You know what it is? I think that it may be an MSI motherboard.
No. I think it's your laptop.
Yeah.
Look at you see, FN is the blue, purple, and then you have a little touchpad. Right. Turn off touchpad.
Wait a second. I did see that. That was in a couple of forums when I was looking for ways to turn it on.
Well, that was other people who didn't realize it was a function of their laptop.
Yeah, it could be. But also, there's another way to do it, though, everyone. If you use the command EXIMPUT, what that's going to do is that's going to give you a list, or actually, X input altogether, space list. What that's going to do is it's going to give you a list of all of the input devices that are recognized by your system. So then once you do that, you just simply look for the, and again, this is getting into a little more esoteric, but if you look for your particular touchpad, what its ID is, then what you can just simply do is either change it to, you can set prop space, the ID number, and then device enabled or device enabled in quotes space 0, and that'll turn it off. And then putting it back to 1 will turn it back on again.
There are also some applets, I think, for GNOME's called Touch Freeze, which automatically turns it off if you start typing. And if you stop typing, then it re-enables it.
Oh, really? That's nice.
And there's a program called Synaptix.
Yes.
That's on the end.
Okay.
That also lets you control that.
Okay, yeah. I was kind of excited just to see it give you my function F3. Then I find out it's built into my laptop. I guess that's no reason to refer to your laptop. But anyway, I wanted to share that with anyone who wants to give that a try. The other thing, too, is that the Muon suite in KDE is there are several aspects to it. You've got the updater, you've got the installer. They have got another part to it called Muon Discover. And if you go into Synaptix, it should automatically be there. What's nice about it is it gives it a more I'll say a more Ubuntu-like look as far as what's available to install. There are little graphics, there are descriptions, this type of thing. You know, again, it's very helpful. So again, it's Muon Discover. So check that out in your KDE repositories on your laptop. And I guess that's really all that I've got for my KDE corner this week.
Very cool.
The Linux convention scene for the month of May. On May 2nd through the 4th, we have the Utah Open Source Conference. This is out in Orem, Utah. It's a three-day conference with over 100 sessions about open source software. And again, the Utah Open Source Foundation, it's a collaboration of volunteers and local user groups. So that sounds pretty interesting for anyone who's out in that area. We've got, Tony, this one's going to be of interest to you. We've got the Linux Audio Conference 2013. This is May 9th through the 12th. Although you're going to have to get on a plane and go to Austria. It's an international conference.
He's accepting donations.
Yes. Kickstarter project. We'll see you momentarily. It's an open source software conference for music, sound, and other media with Linux as the main platform. And it's going to have such eye-opening lectures as combining granular synthesis with frequency modulation.
Cool.
Yeah, and then also a lot of other really, really...
really nifty stuff.
Yeah, really nifty stuff. The next one we've got here is the Enterprise End User Summit. This is May 14th and 15th at the New York Stock Exchange. It's by the Linux Foundation. So again, this is an invitation only, so I can get my invitation. It's going to be held out there in New York. This one here isn't Linux exactly, but the end of this. It's the Samba XP 2013. This is May 14th through 17th. This is also out in Europe in Göttingen, Germany.
Yeah, that's because.
It's the 12th International Samba Conference for users and developers. Get to meet the Samba team and discuss requirements, new features, and get an update on current developments. So. And on May 28th and 29th, we've got the Linux Solutions, and this is Linux Solutions Fair in Paris. It's a two-day event that packs a lot of energy into it. Last year, they had 179 exhibitors and over 5,000 visitors, so it sounds pretty good. And then we have Texas Linux Fest. This is May 31st to June 1st. This is at the AT&T Conference Center. And I believe it's down in, I don't have a location for it, but I do have a website for it, and that'll be in the show notes. And it's probably either in, like, Austin or, I wouldn't be surprised, probably Austin.
Somewhere in Texas.
Yeah, somewhere in Texas. Last but not least, we've got LinuxCon Japan. This is at the Shinzan Hotel and Conference Center in Tokyo, Japan, May 29th through 31st. It's the premier Linux conference in Asia. It brings together unique blend of core developers, administrators, and users, and community managers. Oh, and from my homeland, the Croatian Linux Users Convention. That's also in May. It's actually the 15th. I threw that in there thinking, hey, my homeland. But it's the 15th through the 17th of May, and that's in Zagreb, Croatia.
All right.
At the Hotel International.
Nobody cares.
All right. So everyone, that is the Linux convention scene for May 2013.
All right.
Yeah, thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
We'll go ahead with, is it alive? Or is it, what's in a name?
What's in a name?
That's right. Every week we have a little episode of Is It Alive? And this is what I do is I challenge Matt and Tony to determine whether a Linux distro...
You guys are out to help me out.
a little challenge to whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. Now, every other week is Twist Week, and I twist the concept. Previous twists have included whether it's a Linux distro or a bar drink. That was a fun one. And, you know, things like that. This one is really different because I'm going to be asking you questions, and then you're going to have multiple choices, and you're going to have to guess. But it'll be kind of fun. So, and you better get this one, Matt.
All right?
You ready for the first one?
I'm ready.
All right. In what year did Fedora Core officially drop Core from its distro releases? 2003, 2005, or 2007?
2007.
2005.
It officially dropped Core from its sister release in 2007. Okay, that's right, because I remember Fedora Core 3, and I remember unloading that and trying it out. All right, all of these following distros spun off Debian in 1999. Which one was first? LibreNet, Corel, or Storm?
Corel, is that one of them?
Corel. Corel, C-O-R-E-L.
Yeah, Corel.
LibreNet.
Well, wait a minute. You're going Corel or LibreNet?
LibreNet.
Okay, you're going? LibreNet. All right, it was Corel.
Always stick with your first choice.
That's right. All right, you ready for the next
one? No, my choice was always LibreNet. I was getting the pronunciation.
Corel, right?
No, yeah. Because I thought you were saying Corel, but
Corel.
I'd heard of Corel, but I never heard of Corel.
All right, that's late. Okay, the next one is Savion Linux is named after an Italian dessert. It is derived from which of the following distros? Gentoo, Slackware, Debian, or Red Hat?
Gentoo.
You're correct. It is Savion Linux is derived from Gentoo. Very good, you guys. Kind of hanging in there. Okay, which of the following distros is the earliest known distro on DistroWatch? In other words, it was like the first one ever listed on DistroWatch. Is it Happy Linux? Wow Linux? Hang on a minute here. Storm Linux or Plop Linux?
Plop. Slackware is the only one that counts as the first Linux distro.
No. This is not
the question. I know. Yeah, that's the answer. We're nervous in the question. I'll go to Plop also.
All right, you're both wrong. The very first distro that I could, from what I could research off their site, was Storm Linux. And what was interesting about this distro is, here's what was posted. It was Storm, but, oh, I'm sorry. Here's what Happy Linux posted, and this is so comical, I decided to include it. Because they posted that they were dying. I mean, it was basically dead. It said, Happy Linux went dead early May 2002 without any official announcement. If anyone knows the situation, please write to me. Failing that, Happy Linux will remain on this page as historical distribution with not such a happy end. All right, the last question for this morning is addition. Which of these distros was the first to split off Red Hat? Connectiva, Caldera, or WGS Linux Pro?
Caldera.
WGS Linux Pro. And I got that out of Wikipedia. So you'll have to complain to Wikipedia.
They're just wrong. I don't complain to anybody. All right. I'm just
that. That's right. So I'm thinking that did he just win by one?
I won by one.
You won by one, so.
I drove him down and I got him to go to the wrong answer a couple of them.
That's very good. So, all right, well, join us next week for another edition of Is It Alive? Okay, I guess now we're going on to.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
I have a listener feedback from a week ago, actually, that I forgot to say. This was meant for last week's show, or even the week before, I can't remember. And it's from Brad Alexander. He said, I just wanted to comment on the RAM, the most RAM he's ever seen on a machine. He used to work at NIH on the Human Genome Project, and in their Linux compute clusters, and one of the clusters actually had a node that was a sunbox and it had 512 gigabytes of RAM. What they're referring to is I went into work on my day off a couple of weeks ago to build and put in production these boxes with 128 gigabytes of RAM. Because I wanted to be involved because they had the most RAM I've ever seen in my machine.
Yeah. All right. We also got that, and Kevin actually left, but he's
got a couple of feedbacks.
Yeah. So you want to go ahead and talk about that, or?
My house hung up, so I can't.
Okay, well, that's fine. I think I got most of them. The show got an email from Vasquin. A few weeks ago, I reviewed the CIDL Linux, which is a Debian-based, that's based actually on CID. At the time, there was only a 64-bit version of the CIDL available, and he emailed me, and actually one of his, I think one of his collaborators also emailed me to tell us that there's a 32-bit
version. There is a 32-bit version available, and very recently to the show notes.
So the 32-bit version,
yes.
Yeah, I'm going to write that down. All right, so that was another item that came in. Also, last week, I had reviewed Rebel in Linux, and I had a nice email exchange with the maintainer. I think last week I had asked about the Debian multimedia repositories, and after the show, he did respond to us, and he said he was sorry to keep me waiting, but his promise, here's a tutorial on adding Debian multimedia repository to a Dremlin. And Dremlin is the SID version, I believe, of Rebel in Linux that I reviewed. So yeah, this is a guy in India. He's very very responsive,
yeah.
And he also thanked us for really appreciated the review.
Yeah. And the unique thing about it is it costs $5 to download this distribution, which is kind of unusual. But for that $5, you get lifetime email support from this guy.
Yeah, for the lifetime of the distro. Now, so one guy, so
the
person is going to get some additional help. Yeah, but he was very responsive to me, and you know, it's the community. It's all about donate, and
from Visidia, the other gentleman who emailed us was Jed Curtis.
Oh yes, because I mentioned his blog, which is where I. And then since I mentioned it, I went back there, and then he's redone the blog, so he's got a mixture of political and.
Yeah, it's jedsdesk.com.
Yeah. So Jed had put, he had a comment about the CIDL, and he told us also that it's available for music.
Yeah.
I guess that's, what else?
Kevin emailed us. He said he liked Matt's analogy of talk about computers and cars. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want to tell our audience what you're talking
about? It was like, you know, people have no problem paying an auto mechanic to work on their car. But then when it comes to their computers, they think they can fix it themselves. And they try, and they try, and they fail, and it makes my job harder.
In general, we're not talking to our audience, because you guys are more techies, but we're talking about like end
people
users, or grandmas and grandpas. And,
Well, that came out of last week. We held a workshop in my neighborhood, my community association. You guys were the experts there.
Yeah.
So that was kind of
scary.
Yeah, so they put their Windows hands on for a couple hours to help these folks, because these folks use Windows, of course.
But a computer's not going to make me slam into a tree if I get it wrong.
No, it's going to do worse. It's going to turn into a spam bot.
But it... well, you'll have to cut that out.
Yeah.
And you had to cut that out.
He bleeds all my F-bombs. We also had two...
Worse to that effect.
We also had two comments about the sound effect he used.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we're going to add sound effects at the beginning of our session. And the choice was either a teletype sound.
Or Morse code.
Or Morse code. Do you have them? Yeah.
I do, but I'm muted because...
That's all right. And I think I like the... One of the listeners said, use them both. And I think what we should do is start off with the Morse code and just then fade into the teletype.
And then, because I said we can't use them both, they're too long. And Richard Claudio said to use the...
Teletype.
And then Richard Osborne said to use them both, and he said we could just play a couple of seconds of each one.
So I think need to help you with that again.
Actually, if you listen to last week's show, that's what I did.
Did you fade
it? I listened to last week's show.
I posed the question, and I actually only put like 3 seconds of each.
Okay.
And then I put about 1.5 seconds or something of each into it anyways, and just to see what people would hear.
And you did a great job.
Yeah, it sounded great.
Okay. Okay, well, any other listener feedback?
I think
that's all I saw.
All right.
I have some more.
Or you do?
You do.
Let's see, there's... More from Kevin O'Brien.
Okay. He must email you, because I only saw the one.
He said, I'll be there with a large coffee in my hand.
Oh, yeah.
And he was here. And then he said he had him, but he had
with a large coffee in my hand. And I had another one. I can't find it.
It's
here it is. From Brad Alexander. He wants us to talk about his friend's Kickstarter, and it's his office mail.
Chocolate, it loves chocolate.
Yes. Ben Rasmussen, and he runs Potomac Chocolate in Woodbridge, Virginia, though he sells around the world. He has a Kickstarter going currently to replace some equipment. His goal is $10,000, and he is currently at $6,800 with 10 days left. Well, 10 days when he sent me his email on the 24th.
So it's been about a week.
His Kickstarter is at Kickstart/16TR5HF.
Which is actually kck.st/16.
The link will be in the show notes.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so if you like chocolate, donate to that project.
That's right. Hey.
All right. Now that's all I have.
Okay. That's all I have. Hey, we're gonna wrap up. It's gonna be a nice tight show, except for when you were running around with the lights.
Oh my God, those freaking lights!
Okay.
They finally got solved.
We should have applauded for the guy that came in to fix it.
Featured music of the week.
Do we have music songs?
Do we know what the outro music is going to be?
I actually want to use some audience participation.
Oh. You're all going to sing. Just kidding.
I want you guys to tell me what kind of music you'd like to listen to. We'll take a vote.
Everybody says punk rock. Everyone that says punk rock, a dollar.
Punk rock.
Oh, 80s
metal.
80s
metal?
80s metal?
Yes.
And the hair bands. I don't know.
Well, that's glam rock.
No.
Right. Classical.
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 Chopin. Country.
Country.
Well, I can go more with country. If it's not punk rock, it's got to be.
Balkan Carnival music.
It's a technopunk.
Yeah. There you go. In honor of one of our panelists here, maybe we should do a chip tune.
Chip.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I don't know what that is.
Eight bit chips. If you search, you'll find lots of.
Yeah.
I did find chip tune.
All right. Okay. Let's see what we got here.
Plain beans?
Yeah, try that. Okay, we're doing this. We have no idea what this is.
Yeah.
You can try.
I think we're going to go with chip tunes, though. That was a nice
idea. I like that. That's a great idea. And your name is?
Greg.
Greg, thank you very much. Okay, and our technical director over here is going to get this thing started. Is that it?
Yeah, that's a chip tune. Yep.
Is it?
Can you guys hear it?
I like it.
I do too.
Yeah. This song is called Playing Games by Cyber Jeff. I think it's Cyborg Jeff. CYBORGJEFF.
That would be Cyborg Jeff.
Yeah.
casting on the show after.
Yeah.
If anybody's sticking around.
So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 81, EngoCon.
Woo!
Live from EngoCon. This is Tony Demas.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Thomas.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
See ya. Love on Tuesday. Love on Tuesday.
Is it that long?
No, one.
It's the neighbors, George.
Oh, right. I wasn't sure. So, do you guys want more light?
Yes.
Okay. Highlight, I'm assuming?
Yes, please.
Because we have live video casts here.
Yeah, because we've got video casts going on. And it's...
Okay, we got movies, so that's why we keep...
Yeah.
Well, somebody organized that real well.
We'll be back. All right.
After that's fine.
So. If nothing else, we'll put the whole letter.
And for everyone, this will probably be cut out of the...
The edited version.
No one gets to listen to what is...
But this is the best part.
I wanted to hear this later.
After the music, we have the outtakes.
So yeah.
The past music.
Did the camera catch the banging on the wall here?
All right.